Expounding Universe, Season 22, Episode 3! Buffy, Buffy, Raw, where are ya? The book, Lando Calrissian in the Star Cave of Thon Boca. The author, L. Neil Smith. The year, 1983. The chapters, 7 through 9, with your hosts, Jeff and John. Let's go!
Hey everybody, welcome back to Expounded Universe, where I am your host Jeff, and I am joined as always by your other host John, who is doing everything in his power to break me from doing the intro correctly. Aww. With little weird mouth things.
Just little mouth things.
And none of them are getting me. You can't stop perfection. No, I see it. I see you trying to do that thing where you turn your tongue into a U, and it's not. I did the intro right, and I'm going to stick with that.
You got it, man.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm feeling groovy, because I had delicious African food and cider for lunch.
Nice.
Yeah. And some mead, because we went to a tasting place.
Nice.
Oh, man. They got this new one. Tastes like mead, baby.
Tastes kind of like honey, but you get drunk.
The ciders were okay this time. We did flights of four of each, and the ciders were fine. The only one that was really a standout was the pumpkin cider.
Ooh.
Which tasted a lot like like alcoholic pumpkin pie.
Yep. It's what you want.
Yeah.
That's what I want, at least.
Yeah, which what most people should want.
Yeah.
And the best mead was one that was orange blossom honey with lemon and peaches.
Ooh.
Lemon and peaches. And lemon and doo-doo.
Lemon and doo-doo-doo. Lemon and King Dedede.
It was lemon and peaches, and it was really goddamn good.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it was like peach lemonade that got you high. Or drunk, really. I don't think it would get you high. You'd probably drink a lot of it. And also smoke weed.
Yeah.
So if you drank it while smoking weed,
it would get you high. Not the weed.
No, it has a special power where it neutralizes the weed but gets you high in the exact same way. That's just science.
It's just weird science.
Mm-hmm. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing all right. We got a little advent calendar thing for Christmas for like the counting down.
Oh yeah.
But one of them is like little jams.
Nice.
And jellies.
Yeah, yeah.
So we opened up some of those, and we had some like made little tiny pancakes this morning for breakfast.
Tiny pancakes.
You just spread a little bit of the like tiny sampler jams.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we only have Sage is really into them, so we get her an advent calendar every year that plays music when you click a little button on it. And then this year we have one for the cat.
Nice.
It's got like salmon and seaweed flavored treats in a variety of shapes. And it took him about a day and a half to realize that this was going to be a daily event.
Ah.
So now he wakes us up in the morning all like, give me advent calendar. I require.
Open the doors to my treat.
I require fish treat. The Christ child is risen and I require salmon.
Yes, the Christ child is risen. It was dead.
Maybe. I mean, if I can cite the expertise of one Scatman John. You see, those the things you call dead are yet to be born.
Those are dead in strange eons. Hold on.
That's exactly who wrote the Cthulhu novel, was Scatman John.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the Scatman. And he's really afraid of Italian people.
Don't put that on the Scat Man.
No, that's not his fault. And we can't put anything on him now. He's moved on to a better place.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Briefly in Vegas for a while, and then he died.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, the book.
The book.
How about the book?
So last time,
some shit happened.
You know, we left our intrepid heroes.
They were dead.
Lando had very clearly not died.
Yeah, they both were definitely dead. Their ship blew up.
Yeah. So Lando and Buffy conned a whole bunch of people. Well, I'm not even conned them. Mostly were legitimate businessmen for a while in order to get close enough to the actual Star Cave to run the blockade. And they set up a little explosion in the back so that when a beam hit them, it would look like they died.
I don't know what you're talking about. If you're sticking strictly to the events of those three books, they got blown up by a giant beam and are dead.
Yes.
The three chapters.
in those chapters when Lando was like, hey, did you put that thing on the back of the ship that I told you to put there?
Yeah.
So it'll look like we explode.
It's a real shame that thing didn't work and they died.
Such a shame.
Yeah. Obviously, Buffy Raw waited too long to detonate the detonator or whatever it was.
Ah, yes.
And so they died. Remember, you had some messenger having to tell that to Roker Gepta, and he was all grumpy about it.
And he was like, oh, you can go. And then he fed him to killed, a pet because he's an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, definitely at the start of these three chapters, as far as I'm concerned, they're dead. Lando and Buffy died.
Obviously, as we all know.
And we know the chapters don't start with them, so it's going to be fine.
Yeah, it takes, like, a while for us to finally... It takes the third of the three chapters for us to get back to them.
Yeah, like, they start with their obvious dead corpses, as the chapter opens
clearly
with Lihisu, who is apparently back in the Star Cave. He's been waiting in there for assistance from our heroes.
Yeah.
And he is kind of just flighting around, being kind of nervous and hungry, because... What we learn is that the blockade is actively destroying any interstellar eddies of food that would come into the Thon Boca.
Yeah, so anything that would be like, oh, little particles that would feed, like, either them or any of the stuff that they then feed on.
Yes.
So they're just like, oh no, we've got a giant web of just energy that anything that tries to get through into the Star Cave just immediately gets blastoised.
Yes, and they're even spraying some kind of space poison that takes even the simplest organic molecules that might make it through the opening that they can't get shot at and still makes them taste all nasty.
Yeah. So, you know, Lihisu's like, this is... Obviously, I have felt hunger. I was starving when I met Lando and Buffy, so I understand what's going on. And I also know that this is... nowhere near as bad as it can be.
Yeah.
But he's also like, everyone else here, all the other Oswaft, have never experienced a, like, modicum of discomfort, and they are freaking out.
And they're not happy.
No, they're like, oh, I am ever so slightly hungry. I am losing my goddamn mind.
Yes, yeah. They're very entitled.
Yes.
That's what's happening. We're seeing just a collection of rich people be, like, have a bad day on a road trip or something and be like, but where can I eat? Nowhere. You're in the middle of the desert. Well, that's super inconvenient. Who would allow such a thing to occur?
Yeah. It's just one of those, like, yes, the rich boys' staff have taken the day off, and now they have to go to the kitchen themselves. They're like, I don't know what any of this is.
I'm far too fancy a lad to... microwave something.
What is this? I shan't. On principle, why, I haven't even dressed myself, for normally the butler does it.
Arrange yourself into a burgerous form, pile of ground beef. I demand it.
I shall look sternly upon thee.
I'll have you deported to wherever beef is from.
Wisconsin.
Deported to Wisconsin.
Ah, a fate worse than death.
Handle that for me, the tray of bananas.
Yeah. So the Oswaft are just entirely incapable of dealing with anything.
Yes.
So it's Lihisu, of course, when he left and came back, he was like, here's the deal. There's a bunch of people that exist outside of here. They have craft that they fly and exist within. The artifacts themselves aren't alive, but there's people that are alive in them. And of course, all the Oswaft are like, that's dumb. You're dumb. Fuck you, Lihisu. We don't like your shit.
Yes. What we also learned through this chapter is that Oswaft don't really jump to light speed, like we said earlier, so much as they just teleport where they want to go.
Yeah.
Like, well, there might be some time taking place in there, but they can go right through shit. It doesn't matter. The intervening distance is irrelevant to them, where in hyperspeed, you could run into a planet.
Yeah, the thing is, because this is out before we really get into a lot of the establishing rules for what hyperspeed is,
mm-hmm.
like, he could have thought, oh yeah, hyperspeed is literally just... Because he says in here, they go into another dimension and then pop out somewhere else to spaceships. So it might be like, oh yeah, everyone's basically hopping through dimensions. It's just they hop through a different one.
That might be. Yeah, ultimately, I keep running into this problem when I'm thinking about the fact that they're being blockaded, because there's enough Navy to block the entrance to this absolutely gigantic stellar nursery nebula, right?
Yeah.
But I guess the walls of the Thon Boca must be crazy thick and enough to be scaring anybody from just... They're just gas. Just go out the other side, dude. It's just gas. Hit the bricks. Just walk away.
Close your eyes.
And if you're like, no, I can't go through that gas, it'll get in my space eyes or whatever. Fine, you can fabricate whatever out of whatever. That's like your whole deal. Just make yourself a face shield and go through the gas on the other side. It is dozens of light years across. There's no way the blockade can see the other side.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is a fucking nebula. And they're like, oh, we blockade the weird part that enters the nebula that's sort of an open cave-looking thing. And you're like, yeah, but that's just getting the little things that would waft in from that very small part of it.
Yeah.
Particles are still going to go into the gaseous part of it. You can't stop that.
Put some black holes or white holes or something in there, you know, just to make it so you can't go through the gas.
Yep. Nope.
Maybe it just smells bad. There's like, oh, but it's stinky.
Oh, I don't want to go through the fart cloud of Thon Boca.
Yeah, I still need a further explanation as to why they don't just leave out the back, like just push through. It's just some floating space dirt, guys. I'm pretty sure you can do it. You're flying Star Destroyers.
Yeah, and the whole point is they're like, oh, little particles in space that would normally float into there is stopped by this web. And I'm like, is it stopped by the nebula? Is, like, the gas of it enough to repel anything that would float in there?
I think that's what's supposed to be happening. Like, the basic idea, like, the landscape of the Thon Boca is something we will get described to us in these chapters, such as it is. And it's three blue-white main-sequence stars floating at the exact center. And instead of ordering the world around them into an orbit like a normal star would, they're repelling everything. So the normal cosmic soup that would have coalesced into planets and asteroids and all that other stuff is instead being pushed out to a specific distance away from these three stars and then just being stuck there by the repulsion.
Yeah.
And that has caused enough that it can't even coalesce out there. It just stays as a floating mass of stuff. And that's enough that ionizing radiation is happening between them. So there's like lightning bolts in the nebula. It's all kinds of neat ideas, but yeah, it never really explains why these giant, you know, steam shovel monsters can't just kind of headbutt through it.
Yeah. And but you'd think they're like, oh, it's repelling all the stuff, and it's just sort of stuck in this little cloud that's sort of cave-shaped in space. You'd be like, I don't know, dangle your fucking tentacles into the cloud and eat whatever's there.
Yeah, just get some food up in you. You guys will be fine. But yeah, this is just a scene where he is mostly freaking out. He is looking electronically using his senses because he's so far inside the nebula that he can't actually see the blockade. But their constant web of
little invisibility cloaking devices.
Plus their constant web of electrical communication is enough that he can hear it from any distance.
Yeah. We get the fun thing where he's like, oh yeah, I learned Lando's language and it took a while for me to do that. A
couple hours, yeah.
And now they don't realize that, you know, the Oswaft communicate through radio signals and whatnot.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, they're just broadcasting what they think is secure. And he doesn't realize that the code that they use is supposed to be like, ooh, this is secure. He's like, oh, this is a fun game for them.
To him, it's just another language. He's just like, well, I had to learn a language by electronic media word communication with Lando and Vuffy. This is just another one. It took me less time to learn it after I learned that the concept of languages exists.
Well, yeah, they have their own language to the Oswaft. He was just like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, your language is weird. But as soon as he learned it, he's like, oh, code is just a fun game you play humans when you communicate. So it'd be like, oh, if someone was speaking Pig Latin, you're like, oh, you're just having a fun time.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the way he views it because he immediately cracks
their language isn't pictographic or anything. They're just beaming thoughts into each other's heads. So they don't have like an alphabet. So to him, a code is just an alphabet that he doesn't know is supposed to be complicated.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, you scrambled up the words and things that you were doing. Oh, you did it like this. Yeah. Okay, done.
Yeah, you should have guessed that our brains up in here are like the size of city buses. So we're quite clever.
Yeah.
So he's cracked the code, but it doesn't, even the fact that he's cracked their military communication code, he's learned pretty quick that the Navy doesn't fucking know what they're doing.
Yeah, the code, like, the messages they're sending back and forth, he's like, he's not getting anything much out of them.
Yeah.
Of course, he does mention, like, if the Navy knew that they were able to crack their military code within minutes, then they would be even more likely to be like, all right, just fucking nuke them.
Yeah.
Just send everything in.
Yeah, so he's just listening in, but not getting much out of it, because he is, no problem cracking new languages, but still having a hard time distinguishing ships from people. So anyway, that's what's going on with Lahisu. We just have a quick check-in. He notices at one point there's a sudden flurry of electrical activity coming out of the fleet, and that's when the events from the end of the last episode play out.
Yes. He sees a big flash and some nonsense, and of course, at this point, he had been worried. He's like, I haven't really heard from Lando or Vuffy. I would assume that they would, you know, send a communication.
Yes, but obviously they can't, because if they do, it'll reveal their intent to this blockade navy. So they've been very quiet for the past several days, and he didn't know they were out there. All of a sudden, he hears an explosion, hears a burst of electronic communication, sees lasers, and then here comes the Falcon, and it's all dented and busted up and black, and scorched, and
sort of spinning when it arrives.
Off. Yeah. Goop melting out of the back of it because it got hit by a powerful laser that melted a bunch of the metal on the back.
Yeah.
And obviously, it contains dead Lando Calrissian.
Clearly.
Vuffy Raw.
Clearly, the laser that didn't blow up the ship just murdered them somehow.
He's an ex-Vuffy.
Clearly, the robot died from spinning too much.
Yeah, you can't spin the robot. There's a limit.
Yeah, do not spin robot. It's right there on the maintenance tag.
Oh, but he looks like a big fidget spinner.
Aw.
I want to spin him so bad.
Come on, let me spin the robot.
I'm afraid that would cause me to die.
Worth it. Whee!
Yes, but no spinning robot ever truly really lives. Okay, so, yeah, Oswoff locates the Falcon spinning in space and runs up to it. Space style, and it's just like, hey, Vuffy, Lando, hey, Falcon, are my friends in there?
Hey, y'all, anyone good?
Hey, Falcon, because he still more or less is convinced that the Falcon is a living creature that has parasites that can talk.
Yeah, it is very difficult, because, you know, he also establishes, like, as intelligent and capable of making things as the Oswaft are, Lahisa's like, we don't, though. Like, at most, we might create, like, a little thing that we would wear, that like a necklace or some shit.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they don't really have any physical things that they care about. They don't make homes because they just float in space. They don't make clothing, or they don't have an economy, so it's not like they're making things to trade.
Yeah, their intelligence theoretically is very similar to that of like dolphins, where dolphins are super intelligent, very social, but don't make stuff, and so they don't have that aspect of our intelligence baked into them.
Yeah, they're not really big on the whole crafting thing.
Yeah, so to him, having encountered a spaceship for the first time ever, he's just convinced it's an armored version of him that's really small, and for some reason its fleas can talk.
Yeah, and he has been disabused of that notion. Like, he knows that's not right, but he just falls back on asking. Yes. The Falcon, because he's like, it's really hard to wrap my mind around the idea that there is something that can fly around in space and send signals, which is basically like talking to him, and not be alive.
Yeah. So after that, I want to say, do we go to Roker first, or do we do the story of his exploration? Because there's a bit where he's lamenting that the blockade is essentially his fault for volunteering to go outside.
All of the like, I fucked around in space stuff is in this first chapter. Okay. The first chapter is
Vuffy,
also...
The Lahisu story?
Yeah, because he also ends up, like, fucking around and, like, going to check out one of the Navy outposts. He's like, hey, anybody here? And they, like, scramble. Yes. A bunch of fighters.
Well, I think that's a prequel to the blockade, is what that's him remembering how he got into this dumb mess in the first place.
Yeah. He's just like, hey, anybody here? Yeah. And then some Navy guys freak the fuck out, and he's like, oh, you guys aren't fun.
Yeah, so we get two stories. One of them's very short, but the first one is, we get a story from some lady who's working as a outpost, like a guard post at the edge of an important navally controlled planetary system.
Well, yeah, because the Thonboka is so far removed from where, you know, human society is.
Yes.
That this is the first thing he really comes across that isn't Lando or Vuffy, is a, you know, very far edge of where the control of the Navy is outpost.
Yeah.
And it's one of those shit jobs where you're like, ah, yes, here I am in Antarctica looking for signs of life.
Yeah, please not giant penguins or goopy black masses. The two most common types of Antarctic life.
Goopy penguins in black masses!
Yeah, I couldn't come up with a quick way to describe a Shoggoth or whatever they are.
Yeah.
Shoggoth?
Yeah. I mean, I have heard it pronounced in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
sure
think
none of them are right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's an unpronounceable, ineffable name for a monster.
No, man. It's just a Shoggoth.
Oh, is it? I thought they, like, came up with their own name, so it's probably actually, like, Squirk or something, you know?
Nah.
Or just, you know, the concept of being Greek. Whatever Lovecraft is most scared of. So anyway, he goes off after meeting Lando and Buffy. He flies off to this place to be like, oh, more people. Let's meet some people. Let's learn things. And we get the whole point of view is from this lady whose job is to like watch radar dishes. And all of a sudden she sees a blip, contacts another station, is like, hey, you see that thing? It looks like it's made of plastic. What are we looking at?
Yeah, especially because they're like, it's kind of see-through. Like, I can't really tell what it is. And it's our, you know, waves are kind of bouncing off of it, like as if it was just a big sheet of plastic.
Yeah.
So
it's also, that's one of the, I love highlighting these when we come across them because this book does it so much. Plastic feels very out of place for Star Wars. Just saying it's, oh, feels like it's made out of plastic. You got to say it's made out of like
plastisteel
or flimsiplast or one of those, you know,
plasticrete.
Yeah, you can't just say
you
got
to combine two dumb things.
Same thing where when Lahisu's flitting around all nervous, that's how we learn how his hyperspace works. When in the beginning of this chapter, when he's just
waiting,
he's basically pacing, and pacing for the Oswaft is basically teleporting in short distances.
Yeah, and of course, Oswaft aren't normally, you know, prone to nervous behavior like that.
Yeah,
so he's like, it's weird that I'm doing it. Normally, this would be like, if you were a little kid, you might do this.
Yeah.
But he is impatient, and so he's just sort of, like, just bamfing around at, yeah, like, you know, several hundred thousand kilometers
and
at a time.
There's a line about how he hadn't talked to Lando long enough to learn the human concept of the cat. But if he had, he would know that he has many things in common with those irrepressible felines. But anyway, yeah, so they send out the lady who's in charge of the radar dish, who's listed only as a rating, which I could not read as anything but rattling because my brain is poisoned.
Yep, just horrible 40K poisoning in my brain.
she agrees that they should scramble a squadron, so they rouse a couple of fighters, like 12 or so, to go fly out and find out what this is. And then we cut to the reports from the fighters being like, what the hell? There should be something here. It's on all of our radar, but we can't. Oh, God, there it is, because, you know, Lahisu is mostly see-through.
Yeah, and then it just disappears, because he just kind of, like, blinks to the side, and they're like, where the fuck did it go? What happened? And they're like, oh, it's over there! Ah, go scramble!
Yeah, so one of them tries some fancy flying to get around under it, and he just instinctively is trying to maintain his balance in space, so he flips a wingtip and kills a guy.
Oops.
Oopsie-doops.
And then, you know, they try to surround him and shoot at him, and he just, you know, blinks away, and they end up shooting each other.
Yeah, well, another guy dies in crossfire from that. Lahisu has been trying, the same way he did with the Falcon, to bombard them with communications, but these people don't have a Vuffy on their spaceship, so they're not. There's no one inquisitive being like, I think that's a mental image. I think he's drawing pictures of our ships and of poop he would like to eat. And instead is, they're just trying to kill him, so he gets bored right away and just fucks off.
He's like, oh, these guys are assholes. I'm out of here.
Yeah, nuts to this. And then he just flies to another system, also controlled by the same Navy, and accidentally kills 43 people.
Yeah. Well, he shows up and essentially causes a stampede because two different shifts were changing right, yes, when he showed up. And it just, they got so fucked up and terrified, they end up just murdering each other. And he's like, oop, my bad, and I guess.
It's not helped by the Navy sending out subspace communications or whatever, not Star Trek thing, from one planet to the other to be like, hey, some weird monster just showed up and fucking killed three of our ships.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, he didn't do a fucking thing like that. He accidentally bonked one of them when it got too close to him. Then you guys shot one of your own. And then one of them just crashed trying to land, and they just blamed that on him, too.
Yeah. One of them was just bad and sucked, and they went, that was his fault.
It's also him. Put it on the record. So by the time Lahisu arrives at this other system, they're like, fuck that guy. Scramble. That thing's a murderer. And they accidentally kill 43 of their own.
Yeah. And that is when he was like, all right, well, I've managed to pick up enough of your communications to realize you think I'm trying to murder you, so I guess, all right, my bad, I'll leave.
Yeah, he does the Seinfeld in the theater. Oh, nope, uh-uh. Too rich for my blood.
Well, I'm out.
But this time, the government of the Navy had been ahead of him in one respect, which is that they had a stealth scout ship that could follow his hyperspace jump. And that's what led to the blockade. They followed him home and decided that they need to murder whatever's in there, because Jesus Christ, these things are big and scary.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as they find out, they're like, oh, this weird monster showed up. And they're like, oh, there's an entire fucking nebula full of monsters like this. And he's a small one.
Yeah.
So that is what led them to go like, all right, well, giant monster is apparently murdered so many of our guys, which is mostly just them being incompetent, yes. But they're blaming it on that, and yeah. So now they are here.
And so the Oswaft are also kind of blaming this on Lahisu. They have no fathom of exactly what's happening. They just know it sucks.
Oh, yeah, and they are, you know, remotely inconvenienced, and they're like, well, maybe we should go talk to these weird giant things that are outside there and talk about surrender.
Which is amusing to Buffy's like, what the fuck? Guys.
Lahisu.
Lahisu's like, guys, we could just murder all of them easily. Like, most of us are way bigger than me. I'm a little one.
Yeah. You guys could just go out there and be like, hey, quit it.
I think if they just said, hey, quit it, it would disintegrate half the ships. They're like Black Bolt over here. So these guys are real big, but they're also very passive and just sort of minorly inconvenienced at the moment. So they're mostly just like, I don't know, let's just go talk to those tiny things at the entrance and see if they'll go away.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we should give up and see what they want. At least it was like, oh my God, why are you just rolling over immediately? Because we're sad that there's a minor inconvenience.
We're sad that we're dying.
But yeah, that chapter ends with the Falcon showing up and Lahisu being like, oh, hey, you all right, little guys?
Yeah.
Little buddy?
But they aren't, because obviously, as the book has told us on a number of occasions at this point, they are for sure dead.
Yeah, for sure.
Both dead.
Very clearly.
Uh-huh. So there you go. And I assume the rest of the book will go forward with them continuing to be dead.
Of course.
Yeah. So meanwhile, we check in with Roker Gepta.
Roker Gepta.
Just escalating again.
God, it starts in a tiny shielded room on the Wenis.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, people might think this room is super shielded because it's trying to shield it from the output of the ship, but instead, I'm shielding the ship from the output of the room?
Yeah. Basically, he's got a tiny little room, basically the size of a tent, that is stapled between two of the Star Destroyers, because effectively, they keep calling the Wenis a cruiser, but at this point, they've described it as a half-kilometer-long trowel, and I'm like, oh, it's a Star Destroyer. It's just one of the little ones.
Yeah, except they refuse to call it that.
Yes. So he's between two of those giant four fuck-off engines at the back of every Star Destroyer. He's got a little tent made of 200-centimeter-thick metal that no one else can get to. You can only go to it when the engines are turned off. And even when they are, the radiation around there is so fucking dangerous it would kill anyone who wasn't a Roker Gepta.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, the only way to even get in is with a very specialized ship that only I have.
You have to fly out to it. And so he's in there in a little pitch-dark room because he hates lights. And waiting until they turn the engines off so we can fly back out again. And what's he doing in there? The room is featureless, save a single pylon, metal pylon, rising up in the center of it, upon which is set a force shield made of some kind of energy, about the size of a head. A human head.
And it's a tiny little thing, but ooh, he's turned it on, and he's flipping dials, and ooh, now he's making a thing. He's got Oobleck, and it's coming out.
Yeah, he's basically making, I don't know, Ice Nine, or name your horrible poison, Grey Goo. Effectively, he is using the combination of his magical abilities, maybe, or just technologically entirely contained within that pylon, to fabricate a substance that goes from point of life to point of life and kills it and reproduces.
Yeah, it's the same thing that he used on Tund.
Yes.
He's like, oh, the thing that, you know, turned Tund into nothing, and then there's still some, like, little green fire areas on the planet. This is that green fire.
Yes. It's a horrifying substance. A single millimeter of it that gets onto a planet would eradicate the living population of the planet in the matter of hours.
Yeah. It was, if you don't have the specific shielding that stops this from getting through, it will just replicate and destroy everything living eventually.
Now, he's just basking in doing this, because obviously he's Roker Gepta, so he's just cartoonishly evil.
He's like, oh, I'm so angry, and I love making genocide goop.
Yeah. So
I'm evil Gwyneth Paltrow.
I mean, even eviler Gwyneth Paltrow.
I've got goop that'll murder a planet instead of just your vagina or whatever.
Put this egg in there.
Roker Gepta's egg.
What will that do?
It will cost you $96. I didn't ask how much it'll cost. I asked what it'll do. It'll cost
you. It will egg you.
And I answered what it would do.
Cost you $96.
So he's making goop because he's grumpy, and he's going to use it for part of his villainous plan, which I assume is to kill everybody in the Thonboka because he's mad that anybody was involved other than him in the death of Lando Calrissian, who is definitely dead. So he's down there just being like, and I'll use it on the Navy, and I'll use it on the Thonboka residents, and I'll use it on Glin Shanga. And that's when
I'll just throw this shit wherever.
That's when it's a weird chapter, subchapter, because there's a part where he's in the middle of monologuing about how powerful the stuff is, and then he's just suddenly in an interview with Glin Shanga from earlier, which is why he's so mad.
Yeah, because we get a little thing where he's thinking about Glin Shanga, and then there's an ellipsis which then makes it so that it breaks from him thinking about it to us being there.
Yeah, it's one of those flashback bearing ellipses.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he diddly-doots until he's in a flashback where he's sitting in his special office, not in his special super tent.
He's in the captain's quarters,
yeah.
Which he's not the captain, but he does use the captain's chairs in the captain's quarters, but he's not the captain.
They told us that every time they've mentioned the Wenis for three books now.
It's so weird to me that he's like, oh, I'm not the captain, but I have the captain's quarters and chairs, and I have all of the captain's responsibilities and duties, and I'm like, dude, you're the captain. You just say that guy's the captain.
So the reason he was pissed off about Glin Shanga, at least as far as we could tell from before we jumped to this flashback, is because Shanga and his men don't have hyperdrives, so they were supposed to wait for the Wenis to pick them up at the edge of the Tund system, and they didn't. They just started flying towards the Thonboka.
Well, I think it's more that they left without his say-so.
Yes.
We were going to leave and go to the edge of the Thonboka, and I didn't give you leave to go there. And he's like, yeah, we just left because fuck you.
But it doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, I think the problem is that maybe just because this book is so early in Star Wars, like, writing timeline, where he's like, you were supposed to wait for me because your ships don't have light speed capability. And they're like, yeah, but we were just going to fly to the Thonboka anyway. And it's like, dude, anywhere that is not in a solar system would take hundreds of years to get to. You can't just fly to the Thonboka. You're just pissing off the Wenis for no good reason.
They'll
be 50 yards outside the fucking planet.
I don't remember him saying anything about them not having warp capability.
It's right in there. It says that the reason he was so grumpy that they didn't wait for him was because he was understood that his crappy ships don't have light speed. It's right here. Yeah, he's grumpy because they didn't wait for him the way they were supposed to, but there's no way they got anywhere interesting. There may be a tenth of a light year outside the Tund system, tootling along at sublight speed, and the Wenis had to pull up and be like, fucking get in, what are you doing? Like they broke up with him, and now they're trying to walk home grumpy.
Except he was like, oh, but we're going to get there early and wait for you.
Like I was saying, that's interstellar distances. There's no way. It's made multiple point in the last episode as well, that his ships don't have light speed capability, but the Wenis has one that does, and it bore that messenger that got turned into food chunks.
No, it's normally like, oh, like, if you're a little craft, you don't have light speed.
Exactly.
And so,
like, TIE fighters don't, but X-Wings do, and that's the big difference.
It's weird that he is so pissed off. I mean, again, it's mostly just,
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, you're insubordinate because you left when I didn't tell you to leave.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing that drives me nuts there is that they left for no fucking good reason. The Thonboka's got to be centuries away at sublight travel. But does it? Whatever. So now he's in there going like, it was insubordination at Shanga, who is doing everything in his power to make sure that you, the reader, knows he doesn't give a shit about any of this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is mostly just Shanga dunks on Gepta for a chapter.
Yeah, we get a little bit about why Gepta is scared of Shanga.
Because he's like, a man who's unafraid to die. And he's, you know, he's like, oh, I've met people that aren't afraid to die before. And usually it's because they are wanting to die.
Yeah.
They're not afraid of death because they're like, oh, I want to die for a cause, or I want to die because I'm not happy, or whatever.
Super religious. Take your pick. There's all kinds of reasons. But this guy clearly likes life and wants to be alive, but isn't afraid to die. And that's the only kind of person that's scary.
Because he doesn't understand it. He's like, I don't understand why a person that wants to live would not be afraid to die.
Yes. So he's having a hard time with that. We also get an opening piece here letting us know that Shanga's sitting there in his full uniform, sprawled out across multiple chairs. And we get a story about how he brought his blaster this time.
Oh, yeah. Well, the whole thing is, Shanga's just, like, not giving a fuck. When he calls him insubordinate, Shanga's like, dude, I'm not your subordinate. I can't be insubordinate. You don't command me.
I don't work for you. I'm not the least of senior of my men is subordinate to you. You can't give any of them orders.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Fuck you. And he's like, I would think as a military man, you would understand the importance of clear delineation of power. And he's like, yeah, but I'm not a military man. I was a military man. Now, I'm a mercenary, and you need me. So how about fuck you, buddy?
So now we get into the bit about how on his way in, four of Gepta's men tried to take his blaster to be like, hey, you can't have that. You can't go into Gepta's office with a fucking gun. And to make sure that Shanga's a big badass, he broke three of their arms. And when the fourth guy kept insisting, he fucking killed him.
Yeah. Which, I'm sorry. Wait, what the fuck? Up until this point, Clint Shanga has been like, oh, I'm a real nice guy. Yeah, I'm a badass, but my whole thing is I just want to avenge my people. I'm here to get Vuffy Raw. I'm not a bad guy. I'm literally doing this because I think that this guy murdered my entire civilization.
Yeah.
And for some reason, them being like, hey, you can't take your gun in here. And he has already gone through that process the last time he met with Gepta on Tund. He didn't have his gun.
Yeah, but now apparently he's changed his mind and wants his gun on him at all times.
And he fucking breaks three dudes and kills another just so he can have a gun that in this meeting he uses to light a cigar.
Yeah.
What a fucking dick move.
Yeah, it's weird. The whole point of him seems to be that he's supposed to be the one that you can, like, fix. You can kind of expect him to go through, like, it's basically...
He'll realize the error of his ways.
Yeah, it's the Amalgam comic where the Joker teams up with the Red Skull until he realizes what the Red Skull is. That's what we're seeing here, where all of a sudden he whirls on the Red Skull and is like, wait a minute, you're a Nazi? And the Red Skull's like, yeah, obviously, I'm in a full Nazi uniform and I have a fucking Storm SS armband. How did you not put this together? And the Joker's just like, I may be a crazy psycho supervillain, but I'm an American one. That's what you keep expecting to happen here, for him to be like, this was a marriage of convenience, Gepta, but I fucking don't like you or your whole bullshit, and so I'm going to try and kill you. But as soon as he's murdering his underlings for tiny reasons, he loses that fact.
That high ground that he would have had. Because even here, he's like, oh, you know, you need me because while we only have, you know, a few dozen fighters, we're, you know, better than any five of yours.
Yes, he's like,
because
no.
You're the type of guy that murders the messenger. You kill someone just because they're, you know, not pleasing you that day. Even if they're the best of the best, if you think they're slightly insubordinate, you'll either get rid of them or murder them.
Yeah.
You're bad at
this. That's why your army fucking sucks, Gepta, is because you're one of those guys who's like, a tiny hint of failure, you want to learn from it. Learn death. It's a waste of everybody's time, and you're never going to have a good Navy.
That and anyone who does show any amount of competence, you're like, oh, you might be trying to think you're better than me. I'll kill you. Blah. Yeah.
So he's basically there to read Gepta the Riot Act for being a shitty villain, which, again, loses a lot of the wind of its sails when he's like, hey, oh, and also when I got here, I maimed three of your guys and killed another one. And I know in my heart of hearts, because I've met you, Gepta, that the three guys whose arms I broke, they're going to be dead by the end of the day.
Yeah.
You're going to break them for being, you're going to kill them for being weak.
Because they failed to take my weapon.
Yeah.
And when they failed in the line of duty, you're just going to have them killed.
And even if that wasn't an issue, you'd still kill them so that word wouldn't spread around the ship that you let me hurt people on the ship. So by doing this, I have caused the deaths of four men. And yet here I am going to lecture you on how important it is not to kill your own guys.
Yeah. It's
you should have just given the gun.
It's so dumb. Like, it's not like he's going in here like, ooh, yeah, I know that this gun will be of importance. He literally uses it just to light a cigar to be an asshole.
Yeah, but he's basically just here to be like, yeah, Gepta, you can't fuck with me. You need me. Each one of my 23 guys is worth three of your guys. And I really wanted Gepta to be like, you know I have more than 80 fighter pilots, right? Like in a numbers game, I'll still win. This is a Zerg rush, and I have the Zerg.
You don't understand. Even though I murder off a bunch of guys, I get a whole bunch more back.
Yeah.
I have so many dudes.
I have lots of guys. I'm glad that you think you're the Protoss in this scenario. It doesn't matter. But instead, he's just like, ooh, confound that Klinshanga!
And we don't know that he has a whole ton of people. Like, we know he has enough to crew his fucking ship, but we don't know he has a ton of guys.
Could be. He could have less than 30 fighters. It just doesn't feel that way. That seems unlikely, because he's very willing to throw them into bullshit scenarios.
Yes, but then again, he sucks and is bad at this. Like, yeah. Klinshanga calls him out, and as much as Klinshanga is being a douchebag in this, he is very right
he
in
is right.
that
yeah.
fucking Gepta is bad at being a villain.
Like, literally, when he starts calling him out for killing his own men, he is interrupting Gepta having a reverie about how he's going to have to kill those three guys.
Yes.
He said they'd be like, I'll have to have the three of them killed. They'll get full space honors, of course, but I can't let the rest of the ship know this happened. We'll say they died from complication. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm being insulted.
Wait, hold on. He's telling me how stupid I am for doing shit like that.
Yes. But yeah, it's basically this whole thing where Shanga's like, look, I don't need to work for you. You're just my ride. Like, we just want the same thing right now. That's all this is.
Yeah, as soon as I get Vuffy Raw, that's it. We're done. I'm not going to deal with you anymore, and yeah. I don't care.
Yeah, and it's fun because there's a point where Gepta, who is now just in his head being like, I'm going to run through the many ways I'll kill Klinshanga, especially when he's like, yes, you and I both know the villain Lando Calrissian, and we have to go through like a full paragraph where it's like, that's not what Roker Gepta would normally call Lando Calrissian, but obviously his list of epithets and phrases would be too long, voluminous, and inscrutably evil for Klinshanga to possibly understand.
Ugh.
I really wanted him to start one, you know, like, we both know that butthole. Oh, excuse me, I mean Lando Calrissian.
That real fart nozzle.
Total dillweed. Poopy head.
That mustachioed ne'er-do-well.
That's right, I said bum sniffer.
Yeah. This whole chapter between the two of them is like, God, I was on Klinshanga's side before. But now he's also shown that he's just kind of a dickbag.
Which is a shame, because his avuncular what-if-Cable was a fighter pilot vibe
was just
fine.
Just your friendly, cool guy uncle, until he decided, I want my gun so much that I'm willing to murder dudes over it.
That vibe was fine up until he became as bad as Roker Gepta, and then you're like, oh, now he's not as cool as Roker Gepta. At least Gepta leans in.
At least Gepta understands that he is a villain and is as hard into the paint as he can be in that, whereas Shanga does not realize he's a bad guy.
Yeah, so this meeting doesn't really accomplish anything. They're just rehashing everything they're doing. They're just like, yes, we'll get to the Navy and we'll blow them up, and then we'll blow up everyone. We'll get Lando and Vuffy, and it's great. We already had this conversation, you guys.
Yeah, it's just there so that we know that there will be a point where they show up to blow everyone up.
Exactly. It is all very rehashy, though. It's just establishing that these two don't like each other. And as Shanga gets up to kind of just walk away and go back to his ship and fuck all this, we get Roker being like, well, now I hate him. I'm adding him to the list. There's even a part where he tries to do
you
his
just like, made Roker Gepta's shit list.
Exactly. But there's a bit earlier than that when you can tell he's already like, I'm going to kill this fucker. Because he says to Klinshanga, yes, and once you've killed Vuffy, you can go back to your Renitasia system and rebuild your lost civilization. And he goes right into mind monologue where he's just like, little does he know, I have other plans. He'll never set foot on a planet again. And
oh, yeah. Well, he also was like, oh, if these Renitasians are all as headstrong and badass as this guy clearly is, I should wipe them out.
Why, that was the Navy's problem. They only did 2/3 of a job. I'll finish it. I'll destroy them all.
And then right after, he comes down from his mind monologue, and he's all like, you know, he's like, he'll never set foot on a planet again. He just immediately gets deflated by Shanga again, who just knows how to needle this guy, because he's like, I'm not going back to the Renitasia system. It's your fucking suburbs now, you douchebag. There's nothing left of my culture there and no chance of it ever coming back.
Yeah, what do you think I'm going to rebuild there?
I'm not doing this to fix things. I'm doing this because I'm mad.
Yeah, this is for justice, not so that we can then go back and make things better. It will never be better. You fucked us.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of this.
So we get some reestablishing of their positions and a shift in allegiances where now, obviously, I mean, there was never really a shift. Roker Gepta kills everyone who isn't Roker Gepta. That's his joie de vivre.
Well, yeah, because after this meeting, we go back and it just cuts back to him in the little, you know, murder chamber with the pylon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's made his genocide goop and he's just like, yes, eventually everything in the universe will be touched by this and it will finally be just dead and predictable, and that's what I want. And I'm like,
yeah.
Really? That's what you want, Roker?
Yes. I like to think of this as one of my mini pets. It has a certain sort of alive malevolence about it. And I'm like, I get it already. You're a pet guy. You can stop talking about it. Standard pet villain.
You're a weird evil guy that loves weird evil things.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm glad it's not just a cat that you pet. Like, you're not like Dr. Claw or whatever.
No, Blofeld. I mean, he has to be unique. That's why he has the butthole bat spider.
Yes. So that's what's going on with those two. Then we finally check in with our newest friends to this series of books. The One, the Other, and the Rest.
Yeah, the rest have shown up.
Yes, and they have gathered, and they are arranged in rank and file all across a vast amount of empty space, because whatever these things are, there's a fucking lot of them. An uncountable number, vast array of these things.
They're all arrayed by ranks,
mm-hmm.
so that they can all hear what the One is going to say.
Mm-hmm.
And the One, at first, is like, dude, why am I even talking to these? We all know what everyone knows.
Yeah. We're all the smartest thing in the universe, so we're all up to speed.
Yeah. Whatever I say isn't going to be anything new. And, you know, the Other is like, yeah, but they want to hear it because for the first time in, you know, in uncountable amount of years, there is uncertainty. And so just, you know, the pomp and circumstance and the whole, like, pageantry of it is reassuring. They want to hear it. I want to hear it, and it'd probably be nice if you said it. And he's like,
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, and I get the, it's fun as well, because it almost causes a little bit of an apology for our introduction to the One and the Other, where the One got all excited about things, and then the Other made fun of him for talking.
Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, I get it. The thing I have learned is that you're a little talkative when you get all up in your business.
But now we have the Other being like, oh, come on, buddy, you gotta say the thing. Everyone wants to hear you say the thing. It's
come
your
on.
Moment.
We like it when you talk. Now, I'm sorry.
No. Admittedly, I know what these are, and I hate that means I can't speculate, so I'm just gonna speculate as if I didn't, and say that I would love it if these guys were microscopic, and that their uncountable number is like 10, and they just never conceived of a number higher than that, and then the whole thing ends when Lando, like, blows his nose or something. Like, that's the whole story here. That would be amazing.
We have created something! It's chaos! And they're like, oh, you're a virus.
We've invented the common cold!
But no, they just have a little thing where the One comes up and he's like, hey, everybody, we set a little guy out and he's doing his thing and chaos is happening and soon we shall, get him back and then we'll learn all the stuff that it learned. And I'm like, oh, you're the guys who made Buffy.
Yeah. Assembled masses. In the time of chimpanzees, there was a monkey.
Butane in my veins, and I'm out to cut the chunky.
But yeah, I mean, I don't want to. I can agree with you. I know it technically is spoiling, but yeah, they're like, we created a little guy, and he's super peaceful, even more peaceful than us. One might even say he's pacifistic. And you're like, oh, they made Buffy.
Yeah, because the whole speech is, we made a little guy to go out and learn things, and then we're gonna get him back and learn all the things the little guy learned.
Yeah,
I'm like, yeah, no shit. These are the people who made Buffy. It's very clear.
This is the Buffy origin story, is that he was made by these things, and the reason he doesn't remember his beginning is because if he did, then he'd know everything, and he would not be useful for his intended purpose.
Yeah. So they just made a little guy to go experience some stuff.
Yeah. I'm surprised that they limited themselves to One. Eh, you'd think they'd make a bunch of little guys and learn a bunch of stuff. I mean, there are uncountable in number.
Yeah, but even making just Vuffy, they were like, that one thing alone is chaos that we didn't have planned for.
That is true.
So they're like, if they made a ton of them, it would freak them the fuck out.
Maybe they decided to start with microdosing.
Yeah, they're like, look, we're just going to make a little guy, and it's his birthday, and then as soon as that guy's done, then we'll go back.
We're going to start with like 5 to 10 grams of new experiences and then see where that works for us.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, I mean, it doesn't say it in the book, but yeah, as John immediately sussed out, these are Vuffy's ersatz parents.
These are the guys.
Yeah, these are the one, the other, and the rest made Vuffy. And then that's it for them. They're off to retrieve Vuffy from wherever the fuck they are to wherever the fuck he is.
Yep. And wherever the fuck he is where we go for chapter 3, where, you know, hey, what do you know? They're alive.
Mm-hmm. Of course they're fine. So basically, the ship, we get more descriptions about how it's like leaking plasmas and goops and so on.
Oh, yeah. The back of it is just the explosive thing that they put on the back to make it seem like they blew up still generated a shit ton of heat and explosive power.
Yeah.
So the back of the Falcon is just like smoking and parts of it have melted.
Yeah. So they've deployed the external remote or radio controlled fire suppressant systems to start cleaning up the back of the Falcon. And that movement is enough to get Leesu to be like, oh my gosh, someone's in there and they're alive. And sure enough, the lights turn on and he can see through the little windows into the Falcon, which this time is described as a coral encrusted horseshoe crab.
Yeah, why not?
I love all the descriptions of Falcon in these.
And, you know, they shoot out a little message. They're like, hey, buddy, how you doing? We're alive. It's fine.
Yeah, Lando's like, hello, old flatfish. And then he says a bunch of shit that makes no sense to Leesu at all.
Yeah, because he's like, oh, if we hadn't blown up a thing, then you'd be talking to our ghosts. And, you know, the Oswoth don't have a concept of dead beings being around.
Or specifically, the idea that a being would be protoplasmic and see-through. Because the whole deal with the Oswoth is when they die, they switch from transparent to not trans, to opaque.
Yeah.
So ghosts are like the opposite of the Oswoth.
And they just don't have a concept yeah. of a being coming back from the dead.
Yeah. So not, so he listens to Lando's long rambling hello, and mostly all he gets out of it is hello.
Yeah. He's like, oh, you're alive. And also gibberish.
Yes. Plus we start learning one of my favorite things about the Oswoth, which is that their name structures are honorific based.
So, oh, yeah.
So that they list names by what they assume are the are a real name, and then an ever-increasing list of honorifics.
Oh, Lando Master Captain.
Yeah, he's calling him Lando Captain Master, and I love that. I hope it gets longer.
Huh.
But we do get a mention that he's calling him that in the way he would address an elder of his own species with a certain flair of respect. Like, he's still not exactly sure what the hierarchy is among these three weird things he thinks are the living creatures he's encountered. But he's pretty sure Lando's an important one.
Yeah. He's like, oh, the little one calls you master, and that's an honorific, so I guess that means you're in charge of him.
Yes, plus you've been introduced as the captain of the Millennium Falcon, so that's a title, so now you're Lando Master Captain.
Yeah.
And I like that Lando's already mad at Vuffy. He's like, now he's calling me master!
God damn
Everyone
it!
Everyone stop calling me master!
It's the one thing I don't like!
Leesu, call him Lando Fuckface Captain.
Only Roka Gepta may call him Fuckface. Ah, my many epithets.
So he's just like, yeah, here's the deal. We're a little late. Like, they were supposed to meet him a couple of days ago, and Vuffy's explaining to him as fast as he can, like, yes, we got here, and then we had to, like, lie our way through a whole battalion of Navy guys who couldn't know what we were doing before we could finally run the blockade. So Lando's been pretending to be some sort of salesman. And Lando is noting a distinct air of disgust in Vuffy's voice.
Yeah, he's like, come on, man, you know I'm a con man.
What else was I gonna do anyway?
Yeah. just a whole real Navy. Upset that yeah. he's like being dismissive of the fact that he was doing this. He's like, oh, come on.
You'd think he'd love it. I mean, I get it. That Vuffy probably doesn't like con men especially much because, of course, he was forced by a con man to impersonate the leader of the Renitasian system and then fuck
that
all them
thing.
Over forever. Yeah. So that might be why he doesn't like con men, but still, he likes violence even less, and that was the only other option.
Yeah. So, you know, they explain, like, oh, we blew up a thing and made it look like we blew up, and then we showed up here, and, oh, you are very hungry, we can tell.
Oh yeah.
Here, have a little dump.
It's kinda silly, honestly, because first Lando's like, I feel like putting on my swim trunks, friend. And Buffy's like, oh shit, me too, let's do this. And all he really means is he's gonna suit up and go outside and look at, he's never really seen Lahisu with his own eyes.
Oh yeah. And I love this scene of them going out, because they're like, all right, buddy, we're gonna go play around. Like, we are literally just gonna fly around in space and be like, wee, fun times.
Yeah. Yeah. So there we have a whole sequence where Lando's using the jets on his spaceship. We establish that Buffy can just propel himself through space with something, and no one knows what the fuck it is.
Yep. No questions asked. Nobody cares.
He can just move around out there like he's like it's normal for him. Gee, I wonder if that's some kind of foreshadowing. But yeah, Lando's basically pretending that he's a World War I fighter biplane, and Lahisu is a dirigible, and he's just flying around pretending to shoot bullets at it.
Yeah. I love the description of this, because it sounds like he's just got finger guns, and he's going, bada 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 bada, I got you, I got you.
I like that even for L. Neil Smith, the references to real Earth are a little heavy here, and so he has to be like, other people in a different time and place might describe the things Lando is doing as Luftberry circles and Immelmann turns. And I was like, I know what those are, and I know that Immelmann is a guy, so yeah, you definitely...
Yeah, you can't say that this is a thing he is doing within, you know, the world of Star Wars, but... You have to say, all right, if this was Earth, then he'd be doing these, okay?
Yeah, there are certain words that are in English that you see in Star Wars books sometimes, and it immediately takes you out of it, because you're like, wait a minute. We saw that once with a name, a name that was like a 15th century French philosopher or something.
Yes.
I forget what it was specifically. But obviously the easiest one, because they have to describe these fucking villains in every book, is sadism.
Ah.
It's named after the Marquis de Sade. And so you're kind of stuck with every time anyone's a sadist in these, they're like named after a crazy dude.
Yeah, well.
Like a real dude.
A real, real man.
But here we get, yeah, he's basically pretending to be a World War I barnstormer, because that might be L. Neil Smith's favorite kind of airplane to describe.
Yeah, but he does the thing, and you know, Buffy's playing along, and he's like, oh, as soon as he gets me in his sights and goes like, pow, pow, I got you. He goes like, oh!
He spins. Buffy is so eager to please Lando that he's like, ah, master, you shot me down! And he, like, spirals out of view. And so the three of them, this ocean liner-sized monster and a little tiny robot and Lando are just having an afternoon of zipping around in space and laughing at each other.
Yeah, just
it's adorable.
A good, fun, playing around like a bunch of five-year-olds on a playground.
That's the kind of shit that should be in more of these Star Wars books.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's the kind of thing where normally you'd be like, oh, Lando went out and he is not tethered to the spaceship. He is just in a fucking space suit.
Mm-hmm.
And normally that would be like, oh, that's the most terrifying possible thing that could ever happen to a human.
Yeah.
But he's just like, nah, this is great. I love it.
He doesn't need to be worried about it at all. His best friend is a robot that can fly with no apparent power source at all or propulsion, who could easily pull him back in. And even if that doesn't work, there's this 800-foot-long monster that's his pal. Right there, he's got Godzilla,
yeah,
who can put him right back on the ship. And Godzuki.
And Godzuki.
So we also get a little bit here, we're winding down, but we get a little bit here of Lando describing what it's like to be inside the Star Cave. The creepiest thing to him is the stars. They don't make any sense, and no physicist would ever like their arrangement or how they work.
Yes.
But he's like, the problem with the Star Cave is I know in my heart of hearts that it's like 120 trillion kilometers from one side to the other.
Yes.
I know that, and yet my eyes won't let me work with that, because that doesn't make sense. So instead, it just feels like I'm in a really big cave, like big enough that I could walk over there in a couple hours.
Yeah. He's like, it's a massive cave, but not like star size massive cave. Like, it just seems, because I can see, you know,
everything,
the curve of one part of the nebula, and I look to the other side, and there's the curve of that. I can see sort of the opening where the Navy blockade is. It makes it feel much smaller than it actually is.
Yeah, it's light years across on the inside, but he can't, his brain won't process that.
Yeah.
And so instead, he's just like, it feels like I'm in a big cave. That's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, while they're playing around, all of a sudden, some bullies come out.
Just a couple of Oswald assholes. Bullies show yeah. up.
They do, as John mentioned, they do feed Lahisu, because everyone's starving in this nebula. So they brought along a bunch of special tanks of amino acid chains that would be delicious for him. I assume they were using those as the fake containers of Beebleberry ice cream. Bungholeberry, whatever it was. So they feed him one of those, and that's enough to set off these two bullies, because as Lahisu is, like, quietly eating the food they bring him, two guys who are, like, seven times the size of Lahisu show up, and they're like, oh, look at you, taking a chance to feed your hungry, stupid little face.
Oh, you dumb baby. You dumb jerk, stupid.
Now, to Lando and Buffy, this is fucking crazy, because these things are orders of magnitude bigger than Lahisu was. And so the two of them come out and start insulting him. And I think my favorite part is when Buffy tries to interpose himself between Lahisu and these monsters. Aww. Like, hey, don't be mean to Lahisu. He's our friend. And like, it's like a microscopic dust mote is talking.
And, I mean, the other thing is, of course, Lando immediately goes, oh, shit, these are the elders.
Yes.
Because he was told, he was like, oh, okay, elders are much larger than this guy is. All right, well, these guys are way bigger than Lahisu, so I assume these are elders. And when he conveys that to Lahisu, he's like, oh, no, these guys are just assholes. The elders are way bigger than them.
I probably mentioned it to you earlier, Lando, that I'm effectively like a teenager in my society. These guys are like 22.
Yeah.
And we're one of those species that just grows forever, like toads or something. So these guys are not big. I'm just really little.
Yeah, I'm just a little guy. It's my birthday, and these guys are big assholes.
Yeah. So the two of them are like, what the fuck are you doing here? And why did you bring this useless crap? And
you are in trouble, and we're going to take you and your tiny little friends, and we're going to go to the elders because they want to rough you up or some shit.
Yeah, you're in trouble now, mister. And Lando's like, wait, you guys aren't the elders? Lahisu's like, no, the elders are much bigger than these two.
The elders are big. These guys are merely large.
So now we know that the elders are going to be like Death Star sized.
Yeah, just absolutely just insanely units. Massive. Yeah.
Going to be like a Pixar mom's ass.
The dumpers on these elders.
Little tiny guy at the front, but almost entirely dumper in the back.
Yeah.
So that's where the chapters end, is they're off to go meet the elders and discuss what's happening and what Lahisu's part in all of this was and who are these strangers he's welcoming. And I guess Lando's going to have to parlay with some, like, half the size of a planet guys.
Yeah, he's basically about to go have a meeting with Ego the Living Planet.
Yes, I have a penis. So there you have it. That's what's up with the chapters. Good shit. Good shit.
There it is.
We're still spinning our wheels before the big climax, but Lord knows we've been establishing some neat new things.
Yeah, I mean, mostly these chapters so far have been like, all right, let's establish all the players. Let's establish who hates who and why.
Yeah. And everybody hates Roker Gepta.
Yeah. I mean, it feels much more wheel spinny for us, I think, because we've read the other two books. Like, if you were just coming in blind, you're like, wait, who the fuck is a Klin Shanga and what's a Roker Gepta? They'd have to spend some chapters being like, all right, well, we have to let you know just how, like, maniacally wizard evil this guy is.
Yeah, yeah. So there you have it. Check in with us in a week or so, and we'll have yet more exciting Star Wars content just like it. But hey, if you're not tired of Star Wars shit yet, why don't you head to our Patreon and give us $4 monthly?
Four monthly dollars, and you can have the expanded universe.
Which, again, that's, I didn't even say it yet, that's at patreon.com/systemmastery, where we have all kinds of bonus content, and as well as that, everything on the Patreon is ad-free, including the original, the main episodes, like this one. This one is about to end with a real ad from, like, a real horrible company or something, I assume. I don't even know who's putting the ads in here.
I don't know what the ads are, and I'll never know.
We took the chance to say no energy companies, and I don't think we really got to anything else. We should probably clean that up a little more.
Yeah, well.
But if you don't want those ads, and I apologize that they're there, but, you know, inflation's what it is. We have to make a living.
Got to make that dollar.
So if you don't like the ads and you have enough money to get away from them, then by all means come to patreon.com where you can support us at even the $2 level, even the bargain basement level, gets you ad-free versions of everything we do.
That's right.
But if you want the bonus content for this, Expanded Expounded Universe, where we make dumb Star Wars stories out of dumb Star Wars facts that we find on Wikipedia, head to patreon.com/systemmastery. Support us at the $4 level. There are other levels as well. Two we already mentioned, and 10 will unlock everything. Two more shows that you have access to. Ad-free everything. It's an amazing deal, so consider it.
Consider the lilies.
And hey, if you don't have the financial resources to get out of the ads right now, I'm not happy that they're there. you have my.
But hey, a fast forward button exists, so yeah, whatever.
We didn't officially say that, but unofficially, there's a 30-second fast forward button.
Officially,
yeah.
Fuck them. You can skip them. Who cares?
So please, by all means, check out those. And just link us to other people who might like us, because Lord knows our usual means of gaining new listeners, Twitter, is becoming a fascist hell pit, and we probably won't be there that much longer.
Yep.
So that's what's up. Thank you so much for checking in with us, though. We still like doing what we do, and we'll still try to do it no matter what the odds.
Yeah, and never tell us those odds.
Please do not. Otherwise, I've been Elan Sleazebagano.
Oh, no. I don't have an ending.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjack's role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.